వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభా నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా. శివశక్త్యా యుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం నచే దేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి. అతస్త్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning. Greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday, on the 30th of July 2020, and with me Team Radio Sai Sunil welcoming you to this morning segment, Divine Glory, on Thursday live from Prashanthinilayam, from the studios of Sri Satya Sai Media Center here at Prashanthinilayam. For those of you who missed the Sai Inspires message today, let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. What must we aspire to learn from the scriptures and scholars? Bhagwan reminds us so that we may put our time to best use, and I quote, "Why is ashanti or peacelessness harassing the world? Because of raga, dvesha and moha, attachment, hatred and infatuation. These are born out of ignorance, which causes delusion. Things seen in darkness cannot be clear. They are mistaken for something else. A rope is mistaken to be a snake. A stump is mistaken to be a thief. A piece of glass may be coveted as a diamond. So this mistaken notion, this indistinct light must go. It can go only if methods of discovering the truth are learned. That is what the shastras or the scriptures teach, and what the pandits or the learned scholars are commissioned to instruct you. They will tell you that the outward seeking senses must be directed inwards. The inner realm of impulses, instincts, habits, prejudices, attitudes must be cleansed before God is reflected clear and bright therein." Unquote. This was taken from a divine discourse delivered by Bhagwan on August 18th, 1964. Dear listener, the time right now in our studios is 51 minutes past 9 a.m. That is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book, Sri Sai Satcharitra, followed by the fourth part of a tryst with divinity from our archives with Dr. V. Mohan. an eminent diabetologist and also who is presently the trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy, holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Also praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic caused by the coronavirus disease be eradicated and all the suffering come to an end at the earliest. Let me also play for you the Krimi Mantra, which has the potency of destroying all the harmful germs and viruses. Samasta lokaha sukino bhavantu.
Om atrinatva krime hanmi kanvena jamadagnina vishvavaso brahmana hataha krimina gumraja apyesha vistapatir hataha atho mata atho pita atho sthura atho kshudra atho krishna atho shveta atho ashatika hata shveta bhissah sarve hata ahara vadya shrutasya havisho yatha tat satyam yadamayamasya jambhayo adadhami tadahitat khantan rasi om shanti shanti shanti.
Chapter 47, Baba's Reminiscences. Story of Veerabhadrappa and Chennabasappa, Snake and the Frog. The last chapter described Baba's reminiscences about two goats. This chapter describes more such reminiscences and relates the story of Veerabhadrappa and Chennabasappa. Preliminary. Blessed is the face of Sai. If we cast a glance at him for a moment, he destroys the sorrow of many past births and confers great bliss on us. And if he looks at us with grace, our bondage of karma is immediately snapped away and we are led to happiness. The river Ganges washes away the dirt and sins of all people who go to her for a bath. But she intently longs for the saints to come to her and bless her with the touch of their feet and remove all the filth accumulated within her. She knows for certain that this can only be removed by the holy feet of the saints. Sai is the crest jewel of the saints. And now, hear from him the following purifying story. The Snake and the Frog. Sai Baba said, "One morning, after taking my breakfast, I strolled along till I came to a small river bank. As I was tired, I rested there, washed my hands and feet, and had a bath and felt refreshed. There was a footpath and a cart track sheltered by a shady tree. The breeze was also blowing gently. As I was preparing to smoke chillim, I heard the croaking of a frog. I was striking the flint and lighting the fire when a traveler turned up, sat by my side, bowed down to me and politely invited me to his house for meals and rest. He lit up the pipe and handed it over to me. The croaking was heard again and he wanted to know what it was. I told him that a frog was in trouble and was tasting the bitter fruit of its own karma. We have to reap now the fruit of what we sow in our past life, and there is no crying about it now. Then he smoked and handed over the pipe to me and said he would go there in person and see for himself. I told him that a frog was caught by a big snake and was crying. Both were very wicked in their past life and were now reaping the fruit of their actions in the present bodies. He went and found that a huge black serpent was holding a big frog in its mouth. He returned to me and said that in about 10 or 12 minutes, the frog would be eaten up by the snake. I said, "No, this can't be. I am its father, and I am here now. How shall I allow the snake to eat it up? Am I here for nothing? Just see how I release it." After smoking again, we walked up to the place. He was afraid and asked me not to proceed further as a snake might attack us. Not minding him, I went ahead and addressed the creature thus, "O Veerabhadrappa, has not your enemy Basappa yet repented? Though he has been born as a frog and you too, though born as a serpent, still hold bitter enmity against him? Be ashamed of yourself. Give up your hatred now and rest in peace." On hearing these words, the snake left the frog quickly and dived into the river and disappeared. The frog also jumped away and hid itself in the bushes. The traveler was much surprised. He said he could not understand how the snake dropped the frog and disappeared on hearing the words. Who was Veerabhadrappa and who was Basappa and what was the cause of the enmity? I returned with him to the foot of the tree, and after sharing again a few puffs of smoke with him, I explained the whole mystery to him as follows. There was an ancient holy place sanctified by a temple of Mahadev about 4 or 5 miles from my place. The temple was old and dilapidated. The residents of the place collected funds for its repairs. After a large amount was collected, arrangement for worship was made and plans with estimates for repairs were prepared. A rich local man was appointed the treasurer and the whole work was entrusted to him. He was to keep regular accounts and be honest in all his dealings. He was a first-class miser and spent very little for the repairs, which consequently made very little progress. He spent all the funds, swallowed some amount himself and spent nothing from his pocket. He had a sweet tongue and was very clever in offering plausible explanations regarding the poor, untardy progress of the work. The people again went to him and said that unless he lent his helping hand and tried his best, the work would not be complete. They asked him to work out the scheme and again collected subscriptions and sent the amount to him. He received it, but sat as quiet as before, without making any progress. After some days, God Mahadev appeared in his wife's dream and said to her, "You get up, build the dome of the temple. I will give you 100-fold of what you spend." She told this vision to her husband. He was afraid that it would involve him in expenses and therefore laughed it off, saying it was a mere dream, a thing not to be relied and acted upon. Or why else did not God appear to him in the dream and tell him about it? Was he far off from her? This looks like a bad dream, having its object of creation of ill feeling between husband and wife. The wife had to remain quiet. God does not like big subscriptions and donations collected against the wishes of the donors, but he likes even trifling amounts given with love, devotion, and gratitude. Some days after, God again appeared in her dream and said, "Do not bother yourself about your husband and the collections with him. Do not press him to spend any money for the temple. What I want is bhava and devotion. So give, if you like, anything of your own." She consulted her husband about this vision and decided to give God her ornaments given by her father. The miser felt disconcerted and decided to cheat even God. He undervalued the ornaments at ₹1,000 and bought them himself, and in lieu of the amount gave a barren field to God as endowment or security. The wife agreed to this. The field or land was not his own. It belonged to one poor woman named Dubaki, who mortgaged it to him for ₹200. She was not able to redeem it for long, so the cunning miser cheated all, his wife, Dubaki, and even God. The land was sterile, uncultivated, and worth nothing, and yielded nothing even in best seasons. Thus ended this transaction, and the land was given in the possession of the poor priest, who was pleased with the endowment. Sometime later, strange things happened. There was a terrific storm and heavy downpour. Lightning struck the house of the miser when he and his wife both died. Tubaki also breathed her last. In the next life, the rich miser was born at Mathura in a Brahmin family and was named Birabhadrappa. His devout wife was born as a daughter of the priest of the temple and was named Gauri. The woman Tubaki was born as a male in the family of the Gurav of the temple and was named Chennabasappa. The priest was a friend of mine. He often came to me, chatted and smoked with me. His daughter Gauri was also devoted to me. She was growing fast and her father was seeking a good husband for her. I told him not to worry about this, as the bridegroom himself would come seeking her. Then there came a poor boy named Virabhadrappa, wandering and begging his bread, to the priest's house. With my consent, Gauri was given in marriage to him. He was also devoted to me initially, as I recommended his marriage with Gauri, but later became a miser. Even in this new life, he was hankering after money and asked me to help him get it, as he was leading a married man's life. Strange things happened. There was a sudden rise in prices. By Gauri's good luck, there was a great demand for land and the land was sold for 1 lakh of rupees, 100 times the worth of her ornaments. Half the amount was paid in cash and the remaining was to be paid in 25 installments or rupees 2000 each. All agreed to this transaction but began to quarrel over the money. They came to me for consultation. I told them that the property belonged to God and was vested in the priest and that Gauri was his sole heiress and proprietress and no amount should be spent without her consent and that her husband had no right whatsoever to the amount. On hearing my opinion, Virabhadrappa was wroth with me and said I wanted to establish Gauri's claim and embezzle her property. On hearing his words, I remembered God and kept quiet. Birabhadrappa scolded his wife Gauri and she came to me at noon and requested me not to mind the words of others and not to discard her as she was my daughter. As she thus sought my protection, I gave her a pledge that I would cross 7 seas to help her. Then, that night, Gauri had a vision. Mahadev appeared in her dream and said, "The entire money is yours. Do not give anything to anybody. Spend some amount for temple purposes in consultation with Chennabasappa. And if you want to use it for some other purpose, consult Baba in the masjid." Gauri told me the vision, and I gave her the proper advice in the matter. I told her to take the principal or capital amount to herself, give half the amount of interest to Chennabasappa, and that Birabhadrappa had nothing to do in the matter. While I was thus talking, both Birabhadrappa and Chennabasappa came there quarrelling. I tried my best to pacify them and told them God's vision to Gauri. Virabhadrappa got wild and angry and threatened to kill Chennabasappa, cutting him to pieces. The latter was timid. He caught my feet and sought my refuge. I pledged myself to save him from the wrath of his foe. Then, after some time, Virabhadrappa died and was born as a snake, and Chennabasappa died and was born as a frog. On hearing the croaking of Chennabasappa and remembering my pledge, I came here, saved him and kept my word. God runs to his devotees for help in times of danger. He saved Chennabasappa the frog by sending me here. All this is God's leela or sport. The moral. The moral of the story is that one has to reap what one sows and there is no escape unless one suffers and squares up one's old debts and dealings with others, and that greed for money drags the greedy man to the lowest level and ultimately brings destruction for him and the others. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 48, Warding Off Devotees' Calamities. Story of Shivade, Sapatnekar. At the commencement of this chapter, someone asked Himat Pant whether Sai Baba was a guru or sadguru. In order to answer the question, Himat Pant describes the signs or marks of a sadguru as follows. Signs of Sadguru. He who teaches us Ved and Vedanta or the six Shastras. He who controls the breath or brands his body with mudras, or gives pleasing discourses regarding Brahma. He who gives mantras to the disciples and orders them to chant the same a certain number of times, but does not assure them any result in a definite time. He who by his lengthy gross knowledge explains beautifully the ultimate principle, but has himself got no experience or self-realization, is not a Sadguru. But he who, by his discourse, creates in us a distaste for the enjoyments of this world and the next, and gives us a taste of self-realization, who is well-versed in both theoretical and practical knowledge, deserves to be called a Sadguru. How can he, who is himself devoid of self-realization, give it to the disciples? A Sadguru does not ever in his dream expect any service or profit from his disciples. On the contrary, he wishes to serve them. He does not think that he is great and the disciple small. Not only he loves him as his son, but regards him as equal to himself or as Brahma. The main characteristic of a Sadguru is that he is the abode of peace. He is never restless nor ruffled. He has no pride of his learning. The poor and the rich, the small and the great are the same to him. Himat Pant thinks that on account of the store or accumulation of merits in his past births, he had the good fortune of meeting and being blessed by such a Sadguru as Sai Baba. Even in full youth, he hoarded nothing except perhaps chillum. He had no family, no friend, no home, nor any support. Since he was 18, his control of mind was perfect and extraordinary. He lived then in secluded places and always abided in his self. On seeing the pure attachment of his devotees, he always acted in their interests, and hence he was in a way dependent on them. What experience he gave to his devotees while he was living in flesh are felt even today after his Mahasamadhi by those who attach themselves to him. What his devotees have to do is this. They have to trim their heart lamp of faith and devotion and burn in it wicks of love. And when this is done, the flame of knowledge will be lit up and shine brighter. Mere knowledge without love is dry. Nobody wants such knowledge. Without love, there is no contentment. So we should have unbroken and unbounded love. How can we praise love? Everything is insignificant before it. Without love, our reading, hearing, and the study are of no use. In the wake of love comes devotion, dispassion, peace, and liberation with all their treasures. We do not get love for anything unless we feel earnestly about it. So where there is real yearning, God manifests himself. It includes love, and it is the means of liberation. Now, let us revert to the main story of this chapter. A man should go to a true saint with a pure mind or even otherwise and hold his feet. Ultimately, he is sure to be saved. This is illustrated by the following stories. Mr. Shivade. Mr. Sapatnekar of Akalkot was studying for law. A co-student, Mr. Shivade, met him. Other fellow students also got together and compared notes of their study. It was found by the questions and answers amongst themselves that Mr. Shivade was the least prepared of all for the examination, and therefore all the students derided him. But he said that though he was not prepared, he was sure to pass the examination as his Sai Baba was there to get him through it successfully. Mrs. Sapatnekar was surprised at this remark. He took Mr. Shivade aside and asked him, "Who is this Sai Baba who you praise so much?" He replied, "There lives in a masjid in Shirdi a fakir. He is a great Satpurush. There may be other saints, but this one is unique. Unless there is a great store of merits of one's account, one cannot see him. I fully believe in him, and what he says will never be untrue. He has assured me that I will definitely pass next year, and I am confident I will get through the final examination by his grace." Mr. Sapatnekar laughed at his friend's confidence and jeered at him and Baba. Sapatnekars. Mr. Sapatnekar passed his examination, settled at Akalkot, and practiced as a pleader there. 10 years after this, in 1913, he lost his only son on account of a throat disease. This broke his heart. He sought relief by making a pilgrimage to Pandharpur, Gangapur, and other holy places. He got no peace of mind. Then he read Vedanta, which also did not help him. In the meanwhile, he remembered Mr. Shivade's remarks and his faith in Baba, and he thought he too should go to Shirdi and see Baba. He went to Shirdi with his younger brother Pandit Rao and was much pleased to see Baba from a distance. When he went near and prostrated himself and placed a coconut before Baba with feeling of devotion, the latter at once cried out, "Get away!" Sapatnekar hung down his head, moved back and sat aside. He wanted to consult somebody who would advise him how to proceed. Somebody mentioned Bala Shimpi's name. Sapatnekar saw him and sought his help. They bought Baba's photos and came with them to the masjid. Bala Shimpi took a photo in his hand, gave it to Baba and asked him whose photo it was. Baba said this photo was of the yar of him, pointing to Sapatnekar. Saying this, Baba laughed and all others joined. Bala asked Baba the significance of the laugh and beckoned Sapatnekar to come forward and take darshan. When Sapatnekar began to prostrate himself, Baba again cried, "Get out!" Sapatnekar did not know what to do. Then they both joined their hands and sat before Baba praying. Baba finally ordered Sapatnekar to clear out immediately. Both were very sad and dejected. As Baba's order had to be obeyed, Sapatnekar left Shirdi with a heavy heart, praying that he should be allowed to take darshan next time. Mrs. Sapatnekar. 1 year passed. Still, his mind was not at peace. He went to Gangapur where he felt more restless. Then he went to Madhegaon for rest and finally decided to go to Kashi. 2 days before starting, his wife got a vision. In her dream, she was going with a pitcher to Lakhat Shah's well. There, a fakir with a piece of cloth tied around his head, sitting at the foot of the neem tree, came close to her and said, "My dear girl, why get exhausted for nothing? I get your pitcher filled with pure water." She was afraid of the fakir and hastened back with the empty pitcher. The fakir followed her. At this, she was awakened and opened her eyes. She told this vision to her husband. They thought this was an auspicious sign and they both left for Shirdi. When they reached the masjid, Baba was not there. He had gone to Lendi. They waited till his return, and when he returned, she was surprised to see the fakir she saw in her vision exactly resembled Baba. She reverentially prostrated herself before Baba and sat down looking at him. On seeing her humility, Baba was much pleased and began to tell her story in his peculiar manner to a third party. He said, "My arms, abdomen and waist are paining for a long time. I took many medicines. The pains did not abate. I got sick of the medicines as they gave me no relief. But I am surprised to see now that all the pains have disappeared at once." Though no name was mentioned, it was the story of Mrs. Sapatnikar herself. Her pains, as described by Baba, left her soon and she was happy. Then Mr. Sapatnikar went ahead to take darshan. He was again welcomed with the former, "Get out!" This time he was more penitent and persevering. He said that Baba's displeasure was due to his past deeds and resolved to make amends for the same. He decided to see Baba alone and ask his pardon for his past actions. He placed his head on Baba's feet and Baba placed his hand on him, and Sapatnikar sat stroking Baba's leg. Then a shepherdess came and sat massaging Baba's back. Baba, in his characteristic way, began to tell the story of a baniya. He related the various vicissitudes of all his life, including the death of his only son. Sapatnikar was surprised to see that the story which Baba related was his own, and he wondered how Baba knew every detail of it. He came to understand that he was omniscient and knew the hearts of all. When this thought crossed his mind, Baba, still addressing the shepherdess and pointing to Sapatnikar, said, "This fellow blames me and charges me with the killing of his son. Do I kill people's children? Why does this fellow come to the masjid and cry? Now I will do this. I will again bring that very child back in his wife's womb." With these words, he placed his blessing hand on his head and comforted him, saying, "These feet are old and holy. You are carefree now. Place entire faith in me and you will soon get your object." Sapatnikar was much moved with emotion. He bathed Baba's feet with his tears and then returned to his residence. Then he made preparations for worship and Naivedya and came with his wife to the masjid. He offered all this to Baba and accepted prasad from him. There was a crowd in the masjid, and Sapatnikar went there and saluted Baba again and again. On seeing heads clashing against heads, Baba said to Sapatnikar, "Oh, why do you prostrate yourself now and then? One namaskar offered with love and humility is enough." Then Sapatnikar witnessed that night the Chavadi procession described before. In that procession, Baba looked like a veritable Pandurang. At the parting next day, Sapatnikar thought he should first pay 1 rupee as dakshina, and if Baba asked again, instead of saying no, he should pay one more, reserving with him sufficient amount as expense for the journey. When he went to the masjid and offered 1 rupee, Baba asked for another as per his intention. And when it was paid, Baba blessed him, saying, "Take the coconut, put it in the upper fold of your wife's sari, and go away without the least anxiety." He did so, and within a year a son was born to him. And with an infant of 8 months, the couple came to Shirdi, placed him at Baba's feet, and prayed thus, "O Sainath, we do not know how to redeem your obligations. Therefore, we prostrate ourselves before you. Bless us, poor helpless fellows. Henceforth, let your holy feet be our sole refuge. Many thoughts and ideas trouble us in waking and dream states. So turn away our minds from them to your bhajan and bless us." The son was named Muralidhar. Two others, Bhaskar and Dinkar, were born later. The Sapatnikar couple thus realized that Baba's words never came untrue and unfulfilled. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Sadguru Sai Baba.
Sai Mohan Ram.
Dear listener, Sairam and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan Baba. Today we bring you the fourth and the final part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Speciality Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Additionally, Dr. Mohan is the president and director of the Madras Diabetes Research Foundation. This research foundation, which Dr. Mohan established in 1996, has published more than 800 papers, including over 500 original research articles in peer-reviewed journals, as well as at least 120 chapters in the textbooks on diabetes, endocrinology, and internal medicine. Dr. Mohan, over the years, has received numerous awards and fellowships. In 2012, the Government of India conferred on him one of the highest civilian awards, Padma Shri, for his yeoman contribution in the field of diabetes treatment and research in India. In 2013, he was awarded fellowship from American College of Physicians, USA, as well as from American College of Endocrinology, USA. In the same year, he was also conferred fellowship from the World Academy of Sciences for the advancement of science in developing countries. One can visit his website, drmohan.com, that is drmohan.com, to know more about him. What is significant is, in 1992, he was drawn to the Sai fold, and since then, he has had many incredible moments of experiencing the divine in his life at various levels. Bhagwan very graciously blessed him to be the convener of the Sri Sathya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, in 2007. Besides discharging his responsibility, he is also very active in conducting free rural diabetes screening camps in several villages of Tamil Nadu. Radio Sai's Bishu Prishti had a conversation with him in November 2013, in which he began with sharing Swami's instructions about diabetes management and then moved on to his journey to Swami and the precious lessons he had learned at his lotus feet. So here is the fourth and the concluding part of this conversation.
So after you came to Bhagwan's fold, there's a lot of unlearning and relearning that happened.
Absolutely.
And which aspect of Bhagwan's teachings really fascinated you the most?
I think it's the
now
service.
That faith had come.
Yes.
But I think you were more drawn also to his teachings now.
To teachings, to the organization also. To be very honest, when I started going to Sundaram and I saw the, you know, that 6 o'clock tongue, the thing sounds, then it starts. And at 7 tongue, every time it finishes to the second. I was wondering, you know, so many songs being sung, different songs, how do they exactly start on time and exactly end on time, you know? This is a very rare organization. So I was very much impressed with the organization
also. Discipline.
The discipline, the way they do it, the politeness, the, you know, the humility of the Sevadals and all that impressed me. But Swami's teachings, the universal brotherhood, you know, the Sarva Dharma, and then the love all, serve all, help ever hurt now. I think that's what appeals to everyone. Because I think irrespective of whether you're even an atheist or a believer to start with, whether you're a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian or Jain or a Parsi or whatever, once you say love all, serve all, help ever hurt never, I think it covers whole of humanity. There can't be better sayings than that. That made a very powerful impact. Although it's very difficult to follow. I'm not saying it's easy to follow. I'm not saying we're all following it. But those teachings, how simple they were. And then the parables and the simple things that he says. And every time I come to Puttaparthi, in his speeches, one line will strike. You know, once he said, if you're taking alcohol, don't bother to come to Puttaparthi. You're wasting your time.
He said that
in one of his speeches. Immediately I gave up alcohol, you know. Because that too profound a statement, you know, after that he gone. Another time he said, if you're not doing charity of some kind, you know, it's a waste of time. All other things you're doing is a big show. So you have to do charity. So immediately, then you have to do charity now, you know. See, it's a simple statement, but it hits you so, then for life you're changed.
Yes.
That, then I have to do charity now, you know. Then I went back to the organization and said, can I join one of your Sai Krupas? Can I do free service with you?
Sai Krupa is the medical...
The medical wing. The clinics. The small clinic. Not only in Sundaram, but in many places in Chennai and all over Tamil Nadu, all over India actually. Where you have the small clinics, no, on Sundays, weekends, where poor patients come. Usually attached to a slum or something like that. So I went and joined. My wife also started coming. We set up a small diabetic clinic there. We started set up an eye clinic there. We donated an ECG there. Small things that we could do. And then started seeing the poor patient. And the kind of satisfaction that we got out of that was something fantastic. Then once in an interview with Swami, just raised the issue about camp. Can I do a, you know, Swami should bless us to do a camp in Kodaikanal. And he said, of course, Sai Shruti, you should use that big ashram. Only when I come, it's used in summer. Rest of the year, it's simply lying vacant. Please use it. There are a lot of poor people there in and around those villages where they need, they don't know. Educate them. Tell them about diabetes. Tell them about what to eat. Tell them about... And he gave instructions about rice and this and that, like we discussed in one. So all those instructions he gave personally. And so that became a regular. So after that, every year Kodaikanal camp happens with the Sai organization and my institution. We join together and then we do this camp. Then this year we start in Ooty. Then we did in Tirunelveli, all with the organization.
Wow.
So in different districts we have started doing. So inspiration came from Swami, because if he can run mega temples of healing here, 300 bedded hospital, thousands of patients, lakhs of patients now who have had free treatment, we feel that we should do a little bit, you know. We can't do like him, but small things under his, with his blessing and with his grace, we started doing the small steps. Again, the inspiration came from him. Everything is his inspiration.
So in many ways, you changed even as a doctor.
Lots.
After you came into Bhagwan's fold.
Yes. That I changed, not only in the way we started looking at thing, you know, from trying to be more humane or trying to show love to the patients. And quite apart from that, over the last few years, and it's evolved slowly. Because as I said, initially never even kept pictures. I was shy. Then he taught me through one episode that that's not correct. You need not feel shy. Then I started bringing in all the pictures. Even then I won't talk to anyone about Swami. Pictures are there. If anybody asks, then that's fine. Otherwise, I don't think. Normally, that's not a taboo subject. We don't talk about it. Later on, I said, why not? You know, then I started, if somebody comes and very, very upset, you know, they've had, you know, somebody died in the family. Okay. The son would have died in an accident or something, you know, 20-year-old boy, just out of college, just in college, 22 years old, just out of college, something like that. And then has an accident and then dies, you know, and the only son. You know, for this, what more that couple has, you know, their life is shattered and they'll come and they'll try not to talk about it. And the sugar also will go up. The BP will go up. Everything will go up, you know. And so sugar is not getting in control. Then I'll say there's some stress somewhere. Then they'll break down, you know. Then, you know, I'll hold their hand and say, you know, don't worry. These things happen. Why did it happen? Why did it have to happen? Then something about the karma theory, what Swami has said. And this is his karma. He had to go through it. It's also your karma that you have to suffer. But all this doesn't mean that God is cruel, or some of them, you know, they lose faith and so on. This is something, it's another teacher for you, you know. Life's one of those teachings. And then after spending 10, 15 minutes with them, then take out a picture of Swami and then give them vibhuti and say, you take this every day. This will give you peace. Keep this under your pillow, you know. Pray to Swami and, you know, I don't know, you may not have faith, but it's my faith. I'm just giving you this. Then they'll come back and say, you know, after you gave that picture, after you gave that vibhuti, our life changed, mm-hmm. you know. So then I say, then why shouldn't I do this more often, you know. So whenever I have a problem, which I think is a little difficult to handle, I have my whole drawer full of pictures and vibhuti and everything ready. I now liberally start giving. Then say, apart from all that I tell you, you know, after all the medical thing, I'm a scientist, I'm a doctor, all that is fine. But beyond me, there is something. There is a force beyond me, you know. And for that, my faith is this. You pray to anyone. Don't worry. But if you want, I'll give you. If you don't want, it's okay. No, we'll take it, we'll take it. 100% of times they will take it. And they'll take it and they'll come back later on and they'll say how their life has been changed. Then I feel, no, okay, he's using us as his instruments, you know. That incident came so that this can come, so that their faith can also be reinforced. So he connects people, you know, the way he connects the dots, he connects different, it's like a master planner, like a master game of chess, you know, going on the whole universe. That's why he's divine.
A lot of spiritualization of healing has happened.
Exactly. Exactly.
Of medical care.
We realized that, like I told you, one of my patients didn't want, to go into an ICU. And she just said, I don't mind dying, but I don't want to die inside an ICU. Now, medically, it's a call you'll have to take, My ICU specialist says, sir, she will die. And I'm not responsible, If you keep her in the room, we cannot do the same service as we can do in an ICU. And at that point, it's an ethical decision now. Okay, what if she dies? So at that point, earlier I would have said no. As a normal doctor, what is it? No, this is an ICU case. This has to be treated in ICU. There's no two opinions about it. In the US, will they allow? Or somewhere else, will they allow? So I say, no, I'm going to break this now. So I'll talk to the family and say, look, these are two choices. She can be inside the ICU where round-the-clock care is there, okay? And nurses there, doctors there, monitoring, this is there, that is there. In the room, we'll try to do all that, but it'll never be as perfect as the ICU. We can't offer in a room the same service as the thing. But the prognosis is not very good anyway. So she may not make it even if she goes to the ICU. So if she goes to the ICU and she dies there, she'll die alone. Okay, she may not, the last minute, you may not be there. Whereas here, you can be with her all the time. But the care may be a little different in the thing. It's an ethical issue now. And I can't take a decision, okay? You take the decision. Tell me which you want. Either way, I'll do it. Whichever thing. Some will choose that. No, keep her in the ICU itself. But Sai devotees and so on will say, we prefer this. Anyway, we are not very thing. So, no need ICU or not. We want to be with our thing. By all means, you take that. And then we try to do our best in that circumstance. And when that patient dies, even outside the ICU, they are so grateful. Because, they'd have been singing a Sai Bhajan when she died. And it makes such a big difference. Rather than hearing the noise of a ventilator going on, bong, 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 sound going on. Here, they're hearing a Sai Bhajan, and in peace the lady is going. You see? If I was not a Sai devotee, if I was not in Swami's fold, I would never have done a thing like that. I would have said, I'm a doctor. Now I'm a doctor, professional. Okay? So I have to do it this way. Now I say, what professional? We are also human beings, So let's look at it the other way. And then
you're now first a devotee, then a doctor.
Exactly. And I think that's how it should be. As to a devotee. I think that's how it should be. And sometimes when I see a serial or something where they depict doctors, I say, this is how doctors are. They shouldn't be this way. This is not how it is. The way they talk, the way they think, Professionalism is good. I'm not saying professionalism. Science is good. I'm a scientist first. So scientist, I'm a professional, everything. Over and above that, first you're a human being, You should never forget that. And the person sitting opposite you, person you're treating is also a human being, They're not some animal lying there, So that, I think that empathy which Swami has shown in, his is an ocean, we are a drop, You cannot compare it with him. That's an ocean, it's a drop. But little drops only make the ocean, So if each one of us adds a drop, ultimately it becomes an ocean. That's what he says, my life is my message, So that is how
otherwise he would have
that.
Come in a human form.
Exactly.
And did
exactly,
everything that.
Yeah.
But to continue your journey with Bhagwan, so how and when did you become a trustee of the Tamil Nadu Trust?
Okay, so that was an interesting thing. In 2005, so I told you 94 I came here, 92 I became a devotee. So up to 2005, I remember coming to Puttaparthi also and standing in these long queues. Sometimes it goes up that hill, So from there, I'll be last in the queue and then walking down and all that. In fact, I remember just before I became made a trustee, I remember as walking, one of my doctor friends from and the profession, they see me as a big doctor and all, So one of my doctors from Tamil Nadu saw me and he said, sir, you are going in the queue. So I said, what do you mean you are going in the queue? Everybody goes in the queue. How do you expect? This is common for everyone, So I go to, when I go to Shabarimala also, I go in the queue only. I don't break the queue and go. This is how it is. Sir, you should be sitting in the veranda, he said. I said, veranda? No veranda and all for me. I like this. I'll go in this and all that. So I was going like that. Suddenly one day I got a call saying that, they are offering to make you a trustee of the Tamil Nadu Trust. So for a moment I panicked. What does it mean, being a trustee and of the Tamil Nadu Trust? And
yeah,
how much
no
work?
Inkling of
no
anything.
Inkling of that. And second thing is that, how much work? That's what I'm worried about. Whether it's all my multivarious activities, I'll have time for it. But the moment
your institutions had expanded so much.
Oh, they're already expanding. Not as much as now, but beginning to expand. That is actually expansion phase. So I was wondering, and my wife had already lived that many years, and we were actually in a nice set thing before her illness came back. That was the stage when this came. And I must tell you this incident, after the trustee thing, the convener thing came. So they made me a trustee, and it was a great thing, So then the thing, The letter itself came from the secretary saying that Bhagwan Satya Sai Baba is appointing you as a trustee and so on. So I got that. I was highly thrilled. I said, this is something very great. And of course, it also gave me a chance to get closer to Swami. Because then you go onto the veranda, as that man had told, then at least you can talk to Swami, and others you are in the distance. No? Those things were very good. Of course, with that comes responsibility. Then, about 2 years after that, the convener of the trust, Sri J. K. Raman, died here in Puttaparthi. And then this post was kept vacant for some time. And I was one of the junior members of the trust. There were people who were much senior to me in age. So I thought, you know, one of the senior people or some new person will come in. I didn't know how the system worked. And actually the state president and even the All India president actually talked to Swami and said, you know, this position, convener of the trust, is vacant now, Swami, and I'll tell you, he said. He didn't think. Then again, after a few weeks, they went to him and said, Swami, lots of checks and things accumulating in the Tamil Nadu trust, because the convener has to do everything. There's no convener of the trust. Can you think? No, I'll tell you. You wait, he said. And all the time, I had been taking non-veg food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And around that time, my wife's illness came back. In fact, the first time when I gave up that alcohol, also when Swami said, that is the time her illness also came. It almost coincided with that, the first time, 94. That's when I gave up alcohol. I used to take occasionally, not that is a regular thing, but I used to take occasionally. And that 94, I gave that up. Swami also said that, then her illness also came, both are linked, okay, given up alcohol. I had come on one of these trips to Puttaparthi, on one of my trips here. And when I was going, I took a book from the bookshop. It was called Swami and Food or something like that. So I took it on the way to the airport, I was just reading, and I just opened the one page of that book. And in that it's written, I have done so many things for you. All your wishes I have fulfilled. In return, I have asked you, it's a paragraph, you know, as if it's addressed to me, you know, saying that, and in return, I asked you for one thing, to become vegetarian. And you have not done so. And you give an excuse saying, and that's what exactly what I used to say, that there's not enough proteins in vegetarian food. So there's not enough protein. I entirely disagree with you. Protein is found in vegetarian food in this.
Swami is telling this.
It's in some discourse.
Yes.
Somewhere he has said, and I'm opening the page and reading it as if it's for me, you know. So I go home and tell my wife and think, Swami's thing is read like this.
It's,
you know,
so clear he's telling that.
So clear. I have asked you and all he's telling, you know. And this is a time when this thing has happened also. J.K. Raman's thing has happened, and then there's no convener also for that. And I'm still taking non-veg food, okay. So I read this, and around that time, a week or so after that, my wife's illness came back. This is October 2007, okay. Her illness came back. And we knew it's secondaries which have come. This is much more serious than the first one. So we were all shattered by that time. And that's the time when I read this also. The first time I gave up alcohol. So I told my wife, I'm going to give up non-veg completely. I'm going to become vegetarian. Okay? Swami's words are like this. And so she said, I'll also become vegetarian. So we both became vegetarian. Till the end, till she died, she was a vegetarian. I'm still a vegetarian now. Last 6 years, I've been a vegetarian. So I became vegetarian. And this must be November something, okay, of 2007. So, September, I think, J.K. Raman died. And then, this is 2 months later. And 2 months is no convener, okay. 2 months later, November, I get a call. Just after I became a maybe 3-4 days later, okay. I was in the puja room doing my 1008 names. So, I finished that and I just came out. I get a call from the All India president and he says, I've just come out of Swami's room and Swami has asked me to ask you whether you would be able to be the convener of the Satya Sai Trust. He's a busy man and he travels a lot and all that. So ask him whether he's willing to be the convener of the Satya Sai Trust. So he's telling me on the phone and my wife is standing next to me and I'm on the phone and saying, sir, convener, sir. I'm saying, so yeah, just come out of Swami's room. I'll have to go back and tell him now. So tell me whether, you know, you'll accept. Swami said to ask you whether you will accept to be the convener. So I said, oh, convener, sir. I said, no. So, because for a memory, you know, what else responsibility is going to come, you know? How much more responsibility is going to come on this, you know? That's my first fear.
Yes.
And my wife says, say yes, say yes, say yes. So I said, yes, sir, yes, sir. I'll accept it. Yes, sir, yes, sir. Oh, thank you. Then I'll go back to Swami and tell. Then I put the phone down. And then he goes back to Swami and says, yes, Dr. Mohan has said yes, so we'll make him the convener. Then the moment I put down the phone, my wife says, don't you realize it's bigger than a Nobel Prize? She says. So I said, what? Nobel Prize. Why are you comparing this with Nobel Prize? You know, what does this do with Nobel Prize? This convener, the Satyasaya Trust. She said, can't you think for a moment what this means? So I said, what? I'm not able to think, no. She says, who appoints the chief minister of a state? Some people. Okay. Who appoints a president? Some people. Who appoints a prime minister of India? Some people. Who gives a Nobel Prize? Some committee sitting there decides to give the Nobel Prize. Who has appointed you? God has appointed you. Which is bigger? Nobel Prize or this? Oh my God, I never thought of this way. I said, why are you even hesitating? I never hesitated. It came as a shock. So I'm on the line and she said, yes, 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 she's telling. So I also said, yes. Then only I realized. That's why in all my CV, you know, when I come for any side thing, after everything I'll say, but I consider this position given to me as the greatest honor of my life. I remember my wife's words. It's true, no? When you're appointed by God himself, what more? I mean, what other award? What Nobel Prize? Nothing. It's all pales in comparison. So I think that's the greatest honor. And that came, and he was waiting for me to become vegetarian. For that, first the book, yeah, then the thing. Then finally, when the moment I become vegetarian, okay. Now, and she's waiting. We'll wait, he says. They're going and asking him. You know, he has already selected me, but he's not saying it until I become vegetarian.
And that journey with Swami and the refinement.
My gosh.
He's a continuous guru.
Yeah. My God.
Constantly, relentlessly seeing how you're taking the next step. Yes. Take the next step.
Yeah. And giving you time, you know. He's not rushing you. He's giving you time. He's preparing you. How he's preparing. His master plan, how he puts it together. It is something which continues to amaze me even now. Things happen like that.
Whenever you sit down and then look back at your life, I think when you start reflecting, then you
realize that he has been there every time. That's why I say in my childhood also he's been there. Yes. All that I never realized until, oh my gosh, it was him. There's a march of time. That was also him. You know, everything was him.
You find out more and more.
Yeah, and he planned all that right then, you know, but so late the realization came. And so
he was there all the time.
Yeah.
Wow. Before we conclude, I just want to ask you, you mentioned earlier about that Muslim gentleman.
Yes.
You know, how Bhagwan...
The pain.
Yeah. You were able to sort of pray to Bhagwan, invoke his blessings and help him get over his pain. And you placed your
ring. Yes, yes.
On his forehead. So tell us the story about the ring.
Okay. This ring was actually not given to me by Swami. Okay. It was given to me by Srinivas Chettiar of the Paduka Trust, Anandanilayam, Madurai. One day, when he was my patient, and he came, and so one day he came to my room, and I told him I'm going to US next week. He asked me next week, I know I'm going to US. He went out, came back, and he said, Doctor, something when you said that US trip, something worried me. Okay, I don't know what it is, but something worried me. So I have this ring given by Swami. Can I give it to you? It is a materialized ring. It is materialized for him.
Oh, he gave it to you?
He gave it to me. He had many. He had so many things he had materialized. So he said, you know, somehow I felt that you need this. Because he's already wearing a lot of rings and all. So he said, this ring, I'll give it to you, but you must wear it all the time. Okay? Don't take it out. Something tells me that you need Swami's protection, so you wear it. From that day, I've been wearing this ring. Okay? Then this Muslim gentleman's episode happened. After that in the interview, I've even spoken about this in front of Swami. But after that in the interview, when I actually met Swami, and I told him, Rumba Swami, in that in that speech, I talked about one incident and this ring. Now the thing is that such instances may come again in the future. So one request to you, Swami. I want you to bless this ring, I said. So he took his hand and said, he put his hand on the ring, he blessed it, and he said, use it for good purposes, he said. I said, always, Swami. When I get stuck in my profession, I will use it, Swami. And that's why I want you to bless it. But I don't know any other way to reach out to you than through this. He blessed it. Story doesn't end there. Few months after that, Srinivas Chettiar goes for an interview with Swami. And Swami tells him, I gave you one ring, no? What happened to that ring?
Oh my God.
Several months later. Okay, so this ring. See, he has kept it and he knows which is the ring he has given, you know. And he remembers which ring is given to whom. Then he said, yeah, Swami, that ring I gave away. Okay, have another one, he says. And he produces an identical ring and gives it to him. Okay, identical one. Another one. He gives it to him. And this you keep, he says. And he gives it to him. It just shows his omniscience. He knows everything about everybody. In the interview room, he told me, he looked at the other two rings and he said, this is your wedding ring and this is your anniversary ring, he said. So, just to say that I know all about you, what you wear, what you think, everything I know about you. You don't have to tell me anything. So, his omniscience, so many times we know. His omnipresence, after the physical form, we are now seeing the other Swarupa now. So, we are able to see his presence in so many ways, in so many places in the world, you know. So, that omnipresence in Ooty, in Sundaram, wherever we go, we are able to see his omnipresence. And then, of course, his omnipotence is all the curing that he does, and all his power is limitless power. So, all the three, the omniscience, omnipotence and the omnipresence, all the three, constantly we are reminded one after the other that it is there. And these are three most important attributes of a God, when you say, you know. And if that God, living God, has these three attributes, and if we have had the good fortune to have been near that avatar, and to have darshan, sparshan, samrakshan with this avatar, I think we are really blessed. And I don't think more than that, anything more in life can be more satisfying than that.
Finally, I just want to ask you, you had this greatest honor of being appointed by God to be the convener. And you had the chance also to be in that position. And you, of course, continue to be in that position. But till Bhagwan's physical form was there, you were in that position and you had all the blessings and the opportunities that that position gave you. How was it when you heard the news of April 2011?
I was here.
You were here?
I was here. I came, you know, the day my wife died 30 days before that.
And Swami had told you she's going to be with you till you need her.
Till you need her. So 17 years he gave. And then the day she died, almost same day, same time was Swami's last physical darshan, 25th of March. I think around 8:45 I hear he finished his last darshan, bid goodbye. 9 o'clock she died, 15 minutes after that in Chennai she died. Same date, okay. So 25th March, so you cannot forget, that's his last darshan, that's her, she died at that. When she died, my only thing was that I'll be able to come and tell Swami that, you know. Swami, my wife is... And then, you know, he'll say, don't worry, she's with me. That's what I want to hear. But 3 days later, he was taken to hospital. So I never got a chance in his physical form to tell him. Okay. Then all my wife... Because 30 days before that, you know, then he was in hospital and I came a couple of times. Then they said, you know, too many visitors and all, we don't want... I could have forced myself and gone. Then I said, no, I won't go into the hospital. I just used to come here. And then a couple of times I came. In between the 30 days, after the rituals, my wife was ill, I came again. And then again I came. Then when I heard towards the end that, you know, things are thing, I said, I'm going to come and stay here. So I came 2-3 days before that itself. Before, I think, 21st April I landed here. And I said, I'm just going to stay here, you know, for a few days. And then 24th April, when the announcement came, actually, when my wife died, I didn't cry that much. Because we knew, you know, for a long time, and she was preparing us, Swami had prepared us, and so it's a long drawn out thing. So although it hurt a lot and thing, we didn't kind of break down emotionally at that time. But with Swami, first of all the news, and then, you know, sitting by the casket, you know. We were given duty to sit there as trust conveners and state presidents. We had to actually sit there. Those are the most painful days of my life, ever. Whole life. And then, on that day, when it was being, you know, physically lifted and thing, something broke. Something broke. Really. Stuff. But from the organization side, it only increased because I felt more responsible. I felt that, because many people in the organization felt that, you know, now that he's not there, whom are we going to report to? What are we going to... I know some people felt like that. But for me, it was the opposite, because I felt that now the responsibility is much more. You know, he has given us the responsibility and said, now you carry forward my mission. I've told you all I have to tell you over these years. Now let's see how you all are going to take it. So I felt I should give more and more to the organization. So I actually started coming more often, doing more of his work. So I feel that, and now when I travel extensively in the world, and because I come here and I'm Tamil Nadu trustee and all that, people ask questions. How is the trust doing? How is this thing? How are things in Puttaparthi? So I feel I can be a small spokesman, you know, to tell at least those who ask, everything is fine and you should be doing more. You should be coming more often to Puttaparthi. People say, there's a vacuum there now. I said, there's no vacuum. That's only if you think that there's a vacuum, you know. Once they asked Swami, between the Krishna avatar and your avatar, where were you? He said, I didn't go anywhere. You thought I went away. I was there all along. You know, I cannot be only coming for some time, then going away sometime. I'll come in different forms, but doesn't mean that you're only limiting yourself to my physical form. That's a mistake that you're making. So that way, he is there all the time. His omniscience is there all the time. Omnipresence is there all the time.
And you're feeling that more and more.
Oh, definitely. And we're seeing it more and more. I think the manifestations have actually increased after the physical form has gone. And we're able to see that. If you pray to him any time, we get it. But actually, if you look at it, even when the physical form was there, most of the incidents that I have described is not when he is next to me, no.
Correct.
It's not I'm sitting next to him and he's doing something for me, no.
Yes. It's only the
prayer. The prayer. I can still pray, no?
Yes.
I can still pray to him. Why should I not pray to him now? And what's different? Nothing is different. Except that if I had a personal thing to come and tell him, Swami, can I do this? He will say yes or no in that thing. I would put it to you, how long do we expect our children to ask us? See, even now when my daughter asks me, my daughter is grown up. Sometimes she asks me, Papa, shall I do this? I said, you take the decision now. You know? Because your Papa won't be there all the time to tell you that, you know? So I want to see you take your own decision. So you take it. Don't even ask me. Maybe right or wrong. Doesn't matter. If it's wrong, you'll learn it that way. But if you have to depend on me every time, you're not going to grow up, you know? That's exactly the same thing with Swami. He has his institutions. He has the trustees. He has all the committees. He has the organization. He has all the directors of various institutes. He has vice chancellors. He has chancellor. He has everyone. Everyone, if they just do their duty according to what Swami has said, he'll be so happy to see that his mission is going on, isn't it?
When the physical form was there, in every discourse, every other time he said, God is in you, around you,
exactly,
but somehow we always run to put him.
Exactly. We want that last thing to be told. At some point he cut the umbilical cord.
And
he
now said, you have to feel that God is in you.
Exactly.
And you have to experience.
And you have to do what he expected you to do and carry on his mission. That I think is very important. That's been a tough learning lesson, but like all Swami's lessons, some of them are tough. Nothing comes easy with Swami.
He is
a tough taskmaster.
Yes.
We know that.
And I think as someone was saying, with Bhagwan there are always tests.
Yeah, always.
Always.
And you have to pass them.
Yep.
And then you go from one level to the next level. He says any degree earned without a proper test is not worth that degree, you know.
Yes.
So each time in life, so it's not that if you're a Sai devotee, you'll never have any tribulations in life. You're a bed of roses after that. Never. Never in human history, man just went like that on a bed of roses. You may think like that. Yes. Sitting here, I'll think, oh, he's got such a, you know, happy life. If I see your problem, then only I'll know. Yes. Sitting across, you'll think, ah, Mohan has got, intuition has got everything. If you see the problems I have, then only you'll know.
Yeah.
So each one has their own. It's to be contented with what we have.
Yes.
And then pray to him when we are not able to take it. You know, at that time, we have to always pray to him. Intensify the prayer when you really need his help, and he comes running.
Yes.
He'll immediately open doors to you and he'll show that you're there.
Whatever it is, I mean, God, his only intention is that we become happy.
Exactly.
We learn to live happily.
Exactly.
We grow.
God is never cruel. God is never cruel. People say, fate is cruel. How can God be so cruel? How can God be this? It's because we don't understand. It's through Maya, the illusion. Why would an all-merciful God be cruel? It doesn't make any sense.
In fact, Bhagavan once said the word called hatred is not there in his dictionary. Because he's just all love.
And you know, some people say he's angry with me. He doesn't. He says it's all a show just to correct you. I'm the repair shop, you know. He'll say, I'm putting you in the repair shop to get repaired. So those things, sometimes it's difficult as human beings to. But then the more we have experiences and the more we realize that, there is a reason for him doing this. This is why he has done that. That is what he meant when he said this, you know. So it all comes back. And I think everybody should read his, either his discourses or Satya Sai Speaks or something on a daily basis. We read Sai literature.
That's what on Radio Sai also, we are playing his discourses. We have a discourse stream.
Yes, exactly.
So that continuously
and you know what? People have a doubt in a particular morning, no? and they'll hear that particular line will be for them.
Yeah,
it's like my opening my food thing and the vegetarian thing. There are so many things in that. Why should that line come to me and change my life, you know, and then become... But that's his way of doing things, and that's divinity.
Absolutely.
For each person, see, just look at it this way. In the darshan hall, 10,000 people are sitting on a birthday day, okay? Swami just goes through a few things. He doesn't meet everyone. But everyone sitting there goes satisfied. How? Oh, Swami looked at me. Swami said this. Swami said that. That is divinity. Can we do that? Can we look at 100 people and say, I find it a problem even when I'm walking out of the darshan line. 10 people talk to me. I don't know who to talk to. If I talk to one guy, the other guy will think I'm neglecting him. Something. Swami has never been, he's always been able to satisfy everyone, no?
Yes.
So, that is divinity.
That is.
He has a thousand eyes. He has a thousand things. Simultaneously, he can satisfy everyone in the world. That only an avatar can do.
Only an avatar.
We cannot do all that.
Wonderful, sir. Thank you very much. It's really been a very enlightening session. And I know there is still so much that we can discuss about Bhagwan, to his leelas and his manifestations of his grace, to how he has directed us about healthy lifestyle and healthy living. So maybe whenever there is another opportunity, we will, by his grace, sit down and discuss more about his work, his love and his message. Thank you so much, sir.
It's always a pleasure to have a satsang about Swami. I consider this as a satsang, and I've tried to, as truthfully as possible, as my memory, yes, gone back so many years, there could be little errors, but it's whatever I've said, I've tried to say
it
as
straight from the heart.
Straight from the heart and as truthfully as possible. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
You just heard the fourth and the final part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Specialty Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Dr. V. Mohan is also the convener of the Sri Sathya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, since November 2007. In conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti, and this was recorded in November 2013. If you have any queries or comments, please write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो हृदय भरो ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो करो
सो हम ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सो हम ध्यान करो सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु सोहम साई ध्यान करो सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे परम दया घन पावन हे परम दया घन पावन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जगदोद्धारण कारण सनातन है विनाशन हे जगदोधारण कारण हे साई कृष्ण जनार्दन हे
Shri Guru Parthivasa
Shri